This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
I'm Dan Smolin. I built a successful executive career in marketing and communications before becoming a top headhunter and founding my own executive search firm. Now get this. Every day, mainstream media runs stories in which old school bosses and thought leaders frame your work and workplace issues in ways that are often divisive and unmeaningful. And that's just crazy. The time has come for you to answer the question, what's your work fit, so that your work and career fit who you are, how you want to live, and what you want your lasting contributions to be. What's your work fit? It answers your questions and tackles the issues that keep you up at night about advancing your career in this time of workplace revolution. So let's get started. Hey, good day, everyone. Dan Smolin from What's Your Work Fit. I hope you're having a great day, and thank you so much for joining us today on the live show. Or if you couldn't make it, watching us on playback, we appreciate the support that you've given us all. And to that end, if you haven't done so already, we encourage you to engage with What's Your Work Fit. We're on 3 platforms. We're on LinkedIn. That's our biggest one. If you haven't done so already, press the plus follow button on our What's Your Work Fit homepage. We're also on Facebook Live, and you can engage with us by pressing the follow button. And last but not least, we are also on the What's Your Work Fit YouTube channel. And there, just press the black and white subscribe button and you will be on your way. One more thing, and this is my big ask, and it's an easy one. If you like what we're doing here today and throughout our other shows, please tell 5 friends about us and get them to subscribe to What's Your Work Fit on the platform of their choosing. We also have an audio podcast that runs on Fridays. So our conversation today with Kate Lister will be rolled again as an audio podcast 1 week from this coming Friday. Okay. It is with great pleasure that I introduce our guest today, Kate Lister. How you doing, Kate?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. I want to do a little bit of intro on you. Kate is a globally recognized expert in the future of work and workplace. And as president of Global Workplace Analytics, she helps hiring managers to develop, deploy, and measure the results of their remote and hybrid work strategies. That's a tall order, Kate.
It has been for the last 3 years. I can tell you that.
Well, it's my pleasure to bring in my wonderful co-hosts on our What's Your Work Fit in the Workplace series. First up, Mark Gilbreth, the founder and skipper of Liquid Space. How you doing, Mark?
Happy New Year, everybody. Hi, Kate. Great to see you.
Hey, Mark. Good to see you.
And of course, Fran Saley, who is so popular on LinkedIn. He is a tremendous thought leader in the areas of future of work and workplace and commercial real estate. Good to see you, Fran.
Hi, Dan. Great to be with you, and especially great to be with Kate in balmy Carlsbad, California. She's not going to tell us how warm it is.
No. 75. Hi, Fran. Good to see you.
Well, let's get right to it. This is a question that we three have been dying to ask you, Kate, and it is this. How will workplace evolve in 2024? It's kind of a broad question, but I'm going to let you start it off. How will workplace evolve in 2024?
Well, for one thing, I hope we can stop using the words remote and hybrid and whatever else we've been calling it for years. I prefer that we just call it work, but the word distributed work, I mean, I just think it's a better description. We were distributed before the pandemic. You know, whether people are 9 floors, 9 miles, or 9 time zones away, we're already working remotely. We were already working remotely. Remotely, I said it in a distributed way before the pandemic. So I hope we can sort of get some language things settled. I think that we've sort of been in triage mode for the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. You know, just very reactive to everything. And we haven't put in place the practices and the processes that we need to make this distributed work as best it can. So I kind of equate it to like when we got cell phones, you only used them in the house for a while, you know, or when we got smartphones, you only used them to make phone calls. I still think that's where we are, where a lot of companies are. So unless we put those practices and processes in place, we're going to have there are going to be a lot of problems, and those problems are going to be blamed on the fact that there are more people working in a distributed way, when in fact, a lot of those things were broken before the pandemic. You know, I love it when people talk about the water cooler. You know, whoever said the water cooler was a good way to do anything, right? Let's not replicate that. Let's not replicate onboarding. You know, 50% of people quit in the first 2 years. That's pretty horrible. We need to learn to work in ways that really optimize the who, what, when, where, why, and how. And I think particularly how is where we're going to have to focus in 2024. I think we're going to see a lot more. The real estate market's going to get a lot worse. I think cities are going to have to work in a more ecosystemic way with the retail and consumer and business markets. And I think the technology is not there yet. And I look forward to some changes in technology that make work better.
Fran, take it away.
Sure, Dan. So, Kate, just following up on what you said here, I think everybody on this side of the aisle believes that getting rid of those descriptors is a good idea. The problem is we have a world out there that still thinks very much on a binary basis. You're either remote or you're in the office, or maybe you're hybrid. They don't really know what that means. It's difficult to get over that hump of, you know, changing that mindset into a more a more distributed work basis. You know, maybe that's a task that's too big. How do we get there? How do we make the improvement on the descriptors, which are going to allow us to get out of the binary mode and maybe into the quantum mode, where some people may just work in an office all the time because that's really the way it should be done by those 10 people. Mm-hmm. But what about the 800 other people? They're working in 15 different ways everywhere. How do you encapsulize that entire thought in a statement that would make sense to people?
And it's going to change, right?
Right, for sure.
So whatever we call it, and that's why I would just prefer to call it work. but you know, part of the problem, it sounds stupid, is keywords. I'm working on a new website right now. And so do I use the word remote? Do I use the word hybrid? They're much higher value in terms of keywords than distributed. And so we've got to get the media starting to use them. And we've got to get other people starting to use them. And we've got to get some people that are bold enough to not pander to the keywords to sort of lead that charge. But I think, you know, I think your point is that's sort of a very tactical thing. But your point is more, how do we think about it? How do we get leaders and people to think about it doesn't matter where, you know, it doesn't matter in some ways how, it doesn't matter in some ways when, you know, to some extent it does for some companies, not for others, but it's just the way we work.
Indeed. You know, for a while I thought the word quantum would be good because, you know, the whole quantum world is everything all at once, everywhere, all, you know, like the movie. And that's really how we're working. But yeah. I noticed
better chaos theory.
I noticed a couple of months ago, there's another firm that picked up the word quantum and they've already sort of branded it. So, but anyway, that's okay. I would be happy to give in to them for that. But I do think that's a good descriptor if we said quantum work as opposed to some other work.
Yeah.
Mark?
Kate, as evidenced by the severe headwinds that the office industry is facing, REIT stock values are down, vacancies at now an all-time high. It's quite evident that most large occupiers are well underway with reducing their office footprints. We see that in the economics of the office industry. You stressed distributed work and the how of work. Where do you see amongst your clients and your observation of the market, where do you see enterprise leadership with regards to getting their arms around the how or the people side of the equation? They're acting on cost reduction. That's great. what do they need to do more of or differently? And who's going to lead the work within enterprises of tackling the people side of the equation?
Yeah. And it's a hard thing to think about, but we're always in this sort of next shiny object mode. So, you know, a lot of sustainability, you know, was really bubbling up at a time. Diversity, equity, and inclusion was bubbling up at a time. And then, you know, the economy starts to slip. And now it's like all about, oh, let's get rid of real estate. And this has happened for years. I mean, it's just a pendulum that swings back and forth between people and real estate and whether the, you know, unemployment is low or high or whatever. And so we've got to think about the big picture. And it just staggers my mind to think that leaders don't understand that if their people are happy, if the people are doing the kind of work they want to do, then it's going to be better for their shareholders. You know, it's just, it's like, hello. and so, you know me, Mark, I'm a metrics kind of person. And so is the C-suite. So yeah, I think that's going to be part of it. Let's use science to say, you know, does this or that increase productivity or innovation? Or, I mean, right now, the biggest things employers are worried about is working outside of the office reduces productivity, destroys culture, reduces innovation, and reduces engagement. Every one of those is wrong. And the science has shown that it's wrong over and over and over again. They're worrying about the wrong problems. You know, there are plenty of things to worry about in this new world of work, but those aren't the things. And if they are, then measure them. I've never had a leader answer my question, how do you know people are less productive or how do you know people are less creative? It's just a feeling, you know? This is, you know, multi-millions of dollars we're talking about. We can't operate on feelings.
We can't operate on feelings, but the employee experience or EX element in 2024 seems to resonate with a lot of people. I've got a comment and then I've got video to show you. So the comment is from Jill P. Hey, Jill, thank you for tuning in. She asks, in 2024, how will EX evolve in the workplace? Hopefully less shaming and more listening. Now I want to show you guys a video to deal with the shaming and the less shaming and more listening. This is something that our friend Nick Bloom ran yesterday on LinkedIn and blew up LinkedIn. Absolutely blew. You probably saw it, Kate. Here it goes. Hold your hat. Wait, let me just take this comment off. Hold your hat. Here it comes.
Many of you have come back to the office, and we've noticed it's made a big difference. Unfortunately, too big of a group hasn't returned. We're getting more serious about getting everyone back into the office for the simple reason that we're better when we're together.
Working together face-to-face helps us create ideas faster and better, so we have new products and new offerings for our customers.
We're able to collaborate and help each other to be better leaders.
We're better when we're together, and we need to be our best to crush our competition.
Your manager will be in touch with you shortly about how this will be implemented and tracked.
Thank you, team. I want to leave you with this. We aren't asking or negotiating at this point. We're informing of how we need to work together going forward. It's, again, for the simple reason that great companies are built by great people working together and seeing each other eye to eye and tackling the big task. Thank you in advance for your help.
Crushing the competition by informing, not asking.
Yes.
Hey, what do you make of all this? Have we reached a touchstone moment in the C-suite where, hey, board members, we've got to really work with our talent, with our employees, so that their experience doesn't send them for the exits like this video? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, who wants to work for that company? Put your hand up. Don't we have talent shortages? Has anybody heard about that? I just don't know that presumably they have a PR company. Presumably, yeah. You know, they have a board that he didn't just get up and make this video and put it on out to the world. I don't understand it.
You might be surprised about that, you know.
No, oh, really?
I think he wrote the copy for this. Yeah. I really do. I've had clients, especially in executive recruitment, where if the CEO is writing the job spec, it's doom, because they're putting their value stream through it, and they're not operating on the voice of the employee. And I saw this and I was like, the fact that we have to have this conversation is astonishing, but it's also very, very important, because really it's an ROI thing. If you do something like that as an edict, you're sending a portion of your best talent to the exits.
Yeah.
Or they were informing, not mandating.
If they actually execute on the threat, the veiled threat. That's when people want.
I think
exactly. Everybody at the moment is sort of a wink and a nod. Yeah, we want you back in the office. So.
But again, I mean,
but not really. I mean, you don't see too many people on the street.
What was he thinking? I mean, I think the problem is that a lot of leaders really believe their own stuff. And you can show them all the evidence you want. And I've been in this position. And it's like, no, I think we need to get people back to the office. And it's, you know, I think it's an ego thing. I think it's a fear thing. You know, we want to circle the wagons. We've seen companies do this like over the last 20 years that had distributed work programs and pulled them back in. Yahoo, IBM, who's the other one? Best Buy. And it was always when they were in trouble. You know, they wanted to get people back in. I also think it was a veiled layoff program and getting people quit instead of having to let them go. You know, survival of the fittest. I think that's what it's going to come down to. And I wouldn't say he's very fit.
You know, a lot. We did talk earlier about the fact the press isn't really supporting this transformation as much. And there's an article out today in Fortune where Capgemini did a study, and they said, and I think it's included in the North America, that leaders expect their corporate real estate expense to increase 25% this year. So expanded use of quote unquote office space. And then they also referenced the KPMG survey last year, where 60% of business leaders said that we'd be back in the office full time by 2026, I think. So, you know, those things don't seem to be consistent with what we're seeing. You know, but the press is still putting it out there. So
if it bleeds, it leads, right? They're not going to talk about the companies where things are going well, or the companies even, you know, this was true before the pandemic. There were lots of companies that had super robust distributed work programs 15 years ago. I mean, I've been pushing this rock uphill for almost 20 years.
Right.
And, you know, you never read the good news. And I think to some extent, some companies I've got clients that won't let me use their name. They just don't want to put themselves down as this how we are. And I think it's maybe like, oh, maybe we have to pull it back. I don't want to go out there and then have to say I was wrong. I don't know.
Fran, what do you got?
Yeah, okay. Here's another question, Kate. And this is a totally different area. AI, of course, is top of mind everywhere today. Not so much RTO and RTP, but
next shiny object.
From your perspective, how do you see AI impacting this blend of workplaces that we're trying to find a name for? And is that going to favor one group or another, or is it going to benefit everyone equally? I mean, what's your sense of that in talking with clients that you do regularly?
I don't think anybody's ready for it, and anybody has any idea how this is going to change things. I think that it's going to cause unemployment, certainly, probably at the, mm-hmm. primarily at the low end of the wage spectrum. And then that's going to create some unintended consequences, just as the overnight move to distributed work did. I don't know. I love it. I'm afraid of it. But it's here, and there is no getting around it. And I think that what we need to do is find a way to mitigate the risks, and use it to make us better rather than to replace us. And that's how I use it. I just wrote a big thing in third person, and then I said I wanted to put it in first person. I said, "Whoo!" It was done.
Yeah, we'll get to Mark in a second. I just want to pick up on that point. Our last questioner brought up Jamie, and that made me immediately think of the headline from yesterday where Citibank is going to pink slip 20,000 people. I'm wondering if we can get to a place where those numbers get made smaller over time, because we're making smarter decisions about people and about investing in their success, wherever they may be working, wherever, anywhere they may be. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about the layoffs and what we can learn so that in the future, maybe coming up in later 24 or next year in 25, C-suites do a better job of retaining their talent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish... my hope before this recession, if you will, after coming out of the last one, companies overreacted. The big one, the 2008, 2009, and just trash people, and they lose so much trust when they do that. There are ways to not have to lay people off entirely. Give them, some companies found that just giving them the choice, hey, would you like to work 4 days a week rather than five, to cut the payroll? Would you like to maybe job share with someone? I'm a big believer that we're going to entirely transform the way people work over the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. And Charles Handy in the 1960s talked about a shamrock organization where there would be sort of this very small executive part of an organization that was that were employees. And then another petal of the shamrock was outsourcing. And then another petal was the what they called freelancers, and now I would say is the gig economy. And every time we have a recession and people are laid off, more people who have moved to freelance stay there. It used to be that after a recession, they would come back, and that's how we'd know that the recession was over. And that's not happening anymore. For the last two or three, what has happened is, hey, you know what? I kind of like this gig, and I'm going to stick with it. The same kind of thing that happened, I think, to the way people think about their jobs and their work since the pandemic. It's like, no, I'm a different person. And, I don't like the way it was before. And so, I think we're going to see this big transformation. I think artificial intelligence is going to help us understand how we make people, allow people to do their best work. So I envision a time when I'm working on a PowerPoint presentation and my keyboard starts shaking and it says, you know, you're not very good at this. And did you know that we've got 10 vetted contractors that, you know, can do this a lot faster and a lot better than you can? And you like doing it anyway. And by the way, did you know that Mark just did a paper on this and you know, our colleague over here, why don't you go talk to him about it? Because we don't have any understanding of the internal knowledge of an organization. And what a lot of these AI companies is doing, and there's one of them doing it for me right now, is coalescing everything that we know inside an organization and making it available to the people, in, you know, so that, you know, mentoring and onboarding and brain drain and, you know, all of those things that that are just completely redundant. People do them over and over, the same questions over and over again. And I think that that's also going to allow us then to say, okay, this is what this person's sweet spot. This is, you know, this is when they are most productive and how they are most productive and what they're doing. And allow, could you imagine if we got to do 80% of the time what we were good at and what we enjoyed? And at this point, it's from research I've read, it's about 20%. We spend about 80% of our time doing stuff we don't like. And we're in, and it's not our best work. So Mark, I'm just excited about how artificial intelligence may pull that apart.
Yeah, Kate, I'm reflecting on the last sort of 10 minutes of this conversation. Imagine if the true insights from the totality of an organization, like the real needs of every individual employee, the needs of every team, the real outcomes, the real way that work can or is happening. Imagine if all of that was informing the workplace and HR policies, not just the bias or the whim or the lived experience of the CEO, yeah, and saying thou shalt.
And vice versa. And the organization was informing it, you know, and you know, there are ways to get around the whole problem of GPT making it up. You know, I think we'll get over that.
Kate, I've been following you for, heck, I think 15 years. And you've been distinguished throughout that time and before I know for being data-driven. You touched on that earlier today. Back to this topic of the workplace debate within companies or the paralysis, you touched on some of the human factors that can or should be quantified as part of the benefit of how we should be working now. Yeah. When you sit down with a client, or if a client if a prospect comes to you and says, you know, or if a perhaps a self-aware CEO comes to you and says, hey, my impulse would be to do this, but I'm fearful of doing so. I kind of know that's the wrong path. I kind of know the way that I grew up may not be the way that we should be going forward. Help. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty comfortable with reducing my real estate portfolio. My board's happy because I'm saving hundreds of millions of dollars. But this whole people side of the equation has me lost and confused, and I want to get it right.
Yeah.
Do you see a blueprint emerging, framework, loose or otherwise, to help that pitiful CEO that enviable CEO who's got self-awareness saying, I need help. Is there a framework yet emerging around the people side of the equation?
Yeah. I'm hopeful that the S in ESG, environmental, social, and governance reporting will help some of that. I mean, imagine if you have to report the number of training hours that you put in with last year, your employees compared to your competitor, or the number of discrimination complaints, or the number of minorities that were promoted. That's going to force us to actually start to try to measure things.
How about outcomes? I mean, I think those are vital input behaviors or driver metrics. Mm-hmm. But what about, like, I'm the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. If I lean in, if I follow your leadership, and I lean into distributed work, and I lean into enabling choice, what metric or metrics might I look to in the near future that will tell me that I'm winning by doing so?
Yeah, I mean, when I get that question, I always ask, well, what do you want to accomplish? I mean, what are your business goals? And so if your business goals, and we're hearing it a lot now, are to enhance innovation, then look to the science of innovation. And what we know about that is that, what we know from the pandemic, is that our strong ties, people we see all the time, got stronger, and our weak ties got weaker. And that's important because weak ties, those people that are not directly in your circle, that work in different groups, that work in different disciplines, those are the ones that can really help in the innovation process. So how many people do you know pre-post? How many people do you know inside your group? How often do you get together with them? How many people do you know outside your group? How often do you get together with them? What's the quality of that conversation that you're having with those people? This is a prime thing for AI. We know that people are more creative when they're alone, and that, the shower, the car, and certain environments help promote creativity. So, you know, what are those environments like? And you know, do the pre-post measures, however you want to, define innovation. It can't be just patents. That's too easy. But I think that, in a lot of the ways of some of these softer things, we can look at what we know, what the science tells us are the precursors. I think we can do pre-post tests. I mean, there are the big universities that have validated tests on creativity. They put somebody in one environment, put somebody in another environment, and test them. You can do the same thing for productivity. How productive, how focused can they be in this environment or that environment? You can count the number of distractions in one environment for the other, bad distractions. I mean, given that some distractions are good. I think there's all kinds of ways. We just need to think outside the box, and we need to focus on tying our practices and processes and policies around our business goals. Are we meeting our business goals? And if that's, I had one company that said, if I walk out of my office and I see people smiling, that's all I want out. Then I know I'm doing something right. Cool. Get me more of those clients.
And yet we still have people like Tasha. Hey, Tasha, who ask, Kate, you referenced in a LinkedIn post a while back, a Harvard Business Review article on the inequality of working from anywhere. And she's wondering, do you see any improvement of that this year?
I guess I'm not sure whether she means inequality of those who can and those who can't.
That's right. That's what she means.
Okay, versus DEIB. Working from anywhere is a very different animal. Right now, only about 6% of the people that are working flexibly can work from anywhere because it's fraught with all kinds of legal, tax, labor law, all kinds of implications that we just don't have figured out yet.
I think in Tasha's case, she's not somebody who's off in the southern part of France with her laptop. Yeah, I think she means the opportunity to. If she needs to be co-located one day, she can. If she needs to be out in the suburbs on days like yesterday where there were snow days, she can do that as opposed to not being able to do it. And I've heard this a lot from people who are like, privileged people get to choose this outcome, but perhaps less senior people in an organization do not.
Yeah. It's always been sort of polar. At the low end of the spectrum has always been sort of contact center people. And then it's always been at the high end of the spectrum, people that are older, more established, more trusted, higher salary, white. that's been the reality. And I think from the clients that I'm working with, they really learned something from the pandemic about that middle group, that they can do it, that productivity didn't decline, that the company didn't fall apart. I mean, mostly they were actually shocked at how well things worked. Will it become more equal in 2024? Nope, I don't think so. Maybe 2025. I'm sorry. You know, and I also think we need to think about the equality or the inequality of the people who just simply can't. They're just not better in the job, or maybe they don't want to. And how do we make their work experience better? You know, there are ways to be flexible without it meaning when where you work. And I think that we need to think more broadly. And before the pandemic, I mean, that would have been our advice to company. You're not talking about a distributed work program. You're talking about a flexibility program and a whole attitude and ecosystem of different types of flexibility.
Mark, did you want to tag on?
Yeah, just a quick, love your reaction on this, Kate. We're seeing a pretty clear emerging pattern in terms of how the reordering of work and place are playing out. With many of our clients, it's beginning with the cost reduction motion. So, you know, CFO is on the warpath, and I think rightfully so. And they're lopping away large chunks of the traditional fixed footprint. And in many cases, that's resulting in employees being orphaned from an office. Like they end up in a situation where, hey, there's no longer an office for us in Los Angeles, or no longer an office for us in Fort Lauderdale or Phoenix or where have you. But they're starting with the clear action of save cost. It's creating the follow knock-on situation of a need to, or that it comes with, hey, you've got permission now to work from home. In fact, that's the only place we expect you to. But it's then playing through forward into, well, we want something other and better than home. And that's where that then becomes sort of the fertile ground for experimentation around how might we use flexible office, or how might we enable work from anywhere. And so, you know, what do you think about that? Would you be okay with that if that's the way the world played out? You know, we chop away at the overbuilt office landscape, whack-a-mole. You know, so we whack that mole, and then we have to deal with the follow-on sort of human effects, and we find our way to the better workplace policies.
Yeah, that works kind of. It kind of happened organically during the pandemic, where, you know, people who were, you know, regional kind of missed their colleagues. And so they started to go to some flexible work centers or the coffee shop or whatever, because, you know, they wanted that human contact. Sadly, I think it's something that's going to, sadly, the reason it's going to grow is that companies, you know, we're getting these big announcements now that people, they want people back. And their real estate guys are going, well, wait a minute, we sold the buildings. And that's going to, you know, force the hand of using more flexible space. I think the environmental is going to drive that too. I read the other day a study that said 80% of the cost, environmental cost of travel to a meeting is international travel.
Oh, yeah.
And that if you use artificial intelligence to figure out where the spots in regions and have regional meetings rather than big single meetings, you're going to cut a huge part of the carbon footprint. So I think that's going to drive it too. I think we're already seeing that, you know, people are less willing to meetings. And, you know, I think it's a natural thing. I think it probably would have, the whole flexible office thing would have been more a part of the everyday work life had it not been for the companies that were doing it 15 years ago that weren't doing it very well, and the market crashed behind them. So I guess there's some evidence that there are companies not doing it well now too. But I think we've learned some things, and I think that those environments are going to change to be attractive to people, to be places that they want to go, to where they have a better experience, where they, you know, can, they have the serendipity of meeting other people. Yeah, I mean, I think it has to become a part of the ecosystem.
Kate, turning the page a little bit here, you mentioned on your website, by the way, you should tell everybody that you have a new website, which is phenomenal. You should but you talk about research studies that you're engaged in now, and you have some, you know, corporate contributors, which I think is great. It's going to turn into a little hedge fund, probably. You can research. That could be done. But can you give us some insight into maybe one or two of the research topics or studies that are either underway or will be underway? And what are you trying to get to in those particular studies?
Yeah, there's one that I'm really looking forward to. It's going to release about the end of February. I'm working with a company called TechSmith that does video messaging. And what we're looking at is the acceptance of async communications and where async is better or worse, how to do async better, who's using it, and the whole concept of meetings and how many meetings could we replace. I wish I could tell you some of the cool stuff we found, but
I can't
sneak that out. And the another one is that it could be a multi-year study on trying to diagnose what exactly is it about virtual versus physical communications that's different.
Other than the fact you can't catch a cold on a virtual.
That's true.
You got that. And another announcement, if I may, is in addition to the new website, a good friend and colleague of almost 20 years, Kate North, has agreed to join Global Workplace Analytics. And we have also partnered up with, as a strategic partner, NetaMedTab and Caryatid, so that we can offer a more full suite of services around portfolio planning, something that companies are really going to need, about portfolio optimization, and where do you bring in these other facilities, the co-working facilities and the flexible work facilities, and really that whole workplace transformation and cultural change that needs to happen. We haven't, the companies have skipped a big step in this process, and that's the change management and the cultural change and the training. We're also querying this in that upcoming research. Did you receive training? Are your managers trained? This is asking leaders, organizational leaders, how much training have your managers received? Do you think they have the skills to actually manage a distributed team? It's pretty sad. It's all I'm going to sneak out there. But there's a lot of room for improvement, let's say.
For sure. And if you wrote a book about it, it'd be a bestseller, I'm sure.
Let's do that, Frank.
Okay, so we'll take that offline.
Mark?
Congrats on that, Kate. The Kate and Kate power combo is formidable. No one loves you both. This is the season of predictions, Kate, and so I'll fall back on that sort of predictive metaphor for 2024. The chief people officer, the VP of human resources, it seems like they've been sort of in and out of the discourse over the last 24, 36 months as the world of work and places has sort of been in its turbulent period. What lies ahead? Are they going to be deeply rooted in the discourse? Are they going to own it? Are they going to own workplace? Are they going to back away? What do you see happening? What do you predict? What do you want to see happen? Mm-hmm.
There's just been a huge shift over the last 3 years. And again, this is one of those pendulums. Mm-hmm. It was being driven by the real estate people. Mm-hmm. And just in the last year and a half, it's the HR people that are making the decisions. What I would like to see happen is that we all work together with HR, IT, real estate, sustainability. If we can get that cross-functional team to then all look at how do we work, what works best for that combination. It's like a three-legged stool. You can't just look at the HR components and the real estate components and then forget about IT. It's just not going to work. It's going to fall over. And so what I hope to see is more of that combination. And I think we're seeing it in sort of the chief experience officers. I don't know if I like really the director of remote or the director of hybrid, because again, that's sort of polarizing and it's treating one group differently. Maybe as an interim thing, because I think there are some real issues we have to deal with in terms of DEIB and making sure that we don't, in fact, increase those divides through some mistakes in distributed work practices.
I wonder if the first head of remote, Darren Murph, would agree with you. He's moved on to the Ford Motor Company.
I know.
But I wonder if Darren, if you're around, I'd love to know your answer to that question. So, Kate, I have Tom Langtree's question, which I'll try to do a little bit of phrasing on. And he talks about the effect of, you know, during the pandemic and, you know, especially with newbies in the workplace, they weren't getting training, they weren't getting mentoring. How are we going to address training and mentoring going forward? What are your thoughts?
Going back to what I said earlier, we didn't do it very well before.
Yeah.
And so rather than using technology to replicate old ways, we need to use it to improve the old ways. I think artificial intelligence is going to help. I think I've never been an advocate of entirely remote. It works for some companies. I'm not entirely sure it works at a huge scale, but particularly for the younger generation, you know, they need that time together. And if they're going to be in and they want to be mentored, then it means the senior executives have to be in there too. I think the answer probably lies in more intentionality and I've seen this. I was working with a law firm that was really troubling with this. And some of the partners said, oh, I can't possibly mentor. And some of the other partners said, this is great because I can bring a junior person in on a call. This is during the pandemic, so they were doing everything virtual. Bring them in on a call and just let them listen, or I can listen in on a call where they are and maybe give them coaching by chat. To bring them along.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder if we're making much ado about nothing with regards to the impact of the pandemic and remote, distributed, hybrid in terms of how work's happening. I say that because I was on a call 2 days ago with a Fortune 100 insurance company, familiar name, and they shared that 82% of their teams across the company are geographically distributed.
Mm-hmm.
And that was true before the pandemic.
Exactly.
I mean, just distributed work was a working reality. Same thing at IBM, right? And so
it's only going to get more so, you know, globalization and talent shortages. I mean, we've got to learn how to do this well, regardless of whether you're going to be co-located or you're going to be distributed.
Right. Yeah. And it's not to diminish the impacts of the pandemic, because it was grievous and highly impactful for a lot of companies, but the fundamental notion of coordinated distributed work, it's sort of baked into the system now.
Yeah. Martha Johnson was head of the USGSA when they made a big transition to their downtown headquarters and changed a building such that it was designed for 2,500 people, and they wound up with more than 4,000 people in it through the recognition that people were already working outside of the office and making unassigned desking available. She had a line that I absolutely love. She used the word telework. Doesn't create management problems, it reveals them. And I think the same could be said of the pandemic. It didn't create the problems, it revealed them. And I think in some ways accelerated them.
I want to get to one more viewer question, and it's from Shelby, who I hear this a lot from people that watch our show. He says, my team most want a leader. My higher ups want me focused on managing their outcomes. What happens to middle managers like me in 2024?
It's, they're really stuck in the middle. They may believe that their people should be more distributed, but they're getting the mandate from above that says no. I did a presentation to a very probably Fortune 100 company, which was going to be 100% in office. We were not even allowed to use the word remote hybrid, what we're doing at a session for a leadership team. And it was a state of, right? state of work, what other companies are doing.
Right.
How can we not talk about this? You know, it was just insane.
Fran?
Yeah, Kate, I mean, looking back on this entire conversation, I mean, there's been some really interesting components to it, but if you were to really crystal ball your view going forward, where do you think we're going to be 5 years from now?
5 years from now? Well, right now, about 60% of the U.S. workforce has a job that is compatible with at least some level of flexibility. We know that because they did it during the pandemic. And about 40 to 45% are working remotely, multiple days a week. Both of those will change. And I think to the extent that more jobs are certainly going to be have a component that can be done remotely, that whole number is going to change. The percentage is going to change.
Is this like the Nick Bloom swoosh? Are we you know, sort of at a starting point that's much higher and it's going to go up?
I don't think it's going to be much higher. I think that the maximum it might reach in 5 years is probably going to be about 65 to 70% of people work flexibly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there's
knowledge workers, not all workers, right? Just knowledge workers you're talking about.
No, I'm talking about all workers.
All workers. Okay.
Because that 60% was the is of all workers right now. So, I mean, certainly over the next 5 years, the job composition is going to change enough that's going to change. So that I think 65 to 70%. I've been right quite a bit in the past with my predictions. So hold your hat. Okay. But I also think holograms. I mean, I think holograms are going to be, that's going to be a game changer.
Oh, wow. Mark, we got time for one more question for me.
I guess I just want to make a comment to listener Shelby. And, you know, thank you for the candor. You know, you said, hey, what about the middle manager? I, to Shelby, I'd say, hey, listen, be hopeful.
Yeah.
I think there's because I think sunlight sanitizes, right? You know, the pandemic revealed the gaps in terms of management skill sets and training to effectively lead and manage distributed work. Mm. And I think I'm hopeful. I think that topic is getting a lot of attention. I think as pioneers like Kate bring scrutiny to how to quantify people outcomes and other providers rally around answering your question, how can I lead better? I think it's going to get addressed. And I'd encourage you to raise your hand inside your company and say, listen, I want to learn. I know there's a skill set to be adopted here. And there's a lot of great companies like GitLab that have been really forthright in sharing their operational practices. So more of a statement than a question. Kate, I don't know if you sort of share that same optimism or not. Your perspective, should we be optimistic about middle managers getting the help that they need?
Yeah, I also think we should be optimistic that we're going to do a better job of choosing managers. I mean, often managers just, it happens, you know, you get to a certain point and, you know, then you were good at doing something and now they put you in charge of people. That's stupid. And there are some companies now, they're saying you're either on, you know, a leadership track or you're on a an expert track, right. Recognizing that, you know, we don't all want to manage people. So I think that's going to be important. And I also think that there's some science that we need around the difference in managing, you know, distributed. Mm. What we learned is it's prior in non-distributed teams, leaders need to be experts. They need to be looked up to, and that during the pandemic, it turned out that the more effective ones were the managers that were coaches. Mm-hmm. And that were able to galvanize a team that had empathy, and we're hearing that a lot more these days. So I think there's a real different skill set in managing, and if you want your people to be happy, I mean, the biggest reason people quit is they hate their manager. Come on, let's fix it.
but we just need to get more AI support for man. And I think that's coming. That is really cool.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know,
it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I use a tool that in my online meetings now that tells me whether, you know, I talk too much, tells me whether I'm calling on minority voices, whether everybody in the room has contributed, whether I've used any discriminatory words. You know, it's AI.
A little scary.
Kate, this has been so much fun. And another great conversation with my buddies, Fran and Mark. Thank you so much. Before we get to the last question I'm going to ask you, Kate, I'm wondering if you could do two things. Point us to your social media and that brand new website that Fran mentioned.
Okay, happy to. Actually, at my LinkedIn address is right under my name, I believe, if everybody can see that. And so just look me up, Kate Lister on LinkedIn. And our website is globalworkplaceanalytics.com. And online, I am Future Workforce, because when I picked the name, I meant to say place, and I said force, and it stuck. So.
All right, we're going to get to our final question for you, Kate. And this is one we ask all of our guests. And that is, what's your work fit? What attribute, condition, experience, place, or state of mind makes work a wonderful part of your day, doing many wonderful and meaningful things, and not the all-consuming time suck of a day? What's your work fit, Kate?
Comfortable clothes.
Big one.
Dogs.
Gotta have dogs.
Gotta have my dogs by me, you know? It makes it real. It gets me to move, for heaven's sake. Natural lighting, you know, I've got a lot of light in the office, so it's a little dark right here. You know, beautiful, beautiful view out the windows. My husband sits several feet away, and it's good and bad sometimes, but don't tell him. no distractions. I mean, yeah. I could not function, especially as I get older, could not function in an office because I used to think I was a good multitasker, but I am no good at it anymore. And I'm no good at disruptions.
On behalf of my co-hosts, Fran and Mark, I want to ask, can we get you back on later this year to see how things have changed?
Oh, I'd love to. This has been a delight.
It really has been. Thank you, Kate. Thank you, Fran and Mark. We will see everybody again next week. See you then. Have a great week. Take care.
Take care.
Thanks.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.